Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Gopi Janava Labha Girivara Dhani Jai Gopi Janava Labha Girivara Dhani Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Vishnupada Paramahansa Thori Raja Kachari Shatra Shatra Shishimath A.C. Bhaktivinanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Jaya Vishnupada Paramahansa Thori Raja Kachari Shatra Shatra Shishimath Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Ki Jaya ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya His Great Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Prem Sikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhar Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jaya Vrindavanam Ki Jaya Mayapur Dham Ki Jaya Gangamai Yamunamai Ki Jaya Tulasi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya Shri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya Ki Jaya Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol All Gaurisam devotees, all Gaurisam devotees, all Gaurisam devotees, all Gauris, all Gauris, Shishi, Guru, and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text Number 12. Jnanam yada pratinivritta gunor michakram Atma prasada uta yatra guneshu sangam. Kaivalya sammata patastu atta bhakti yogam.
Kaivalya sammata patastu atta bhakti yogam.
ko nivrito harikata suratim na kurya. Jnanam yada priti nivritta gunormi chakram. Atma prasada uta yatra guneshu sangam. Kaivalya sammata patastu ata bhakti yogam. Konivrito harikata suratim na kuryat. Jnanam yada priti nivritta gunormi chakram. Atma prasada uta yatra guneshu sangam. Kaivalya sammata patastu ata bhakti yogam. Ko nivrito harikata suratim na kuryat. Please chant. Jnanam yata prati nivritta gunormi chakram. Ma prasada unesha sangha.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jnanam, knowledge, yat, that which, up to the limit of, pratinivritam, completely withdrawn. Guna urmin. The waves of the material modes. Chakram. Whirlpool. Atma prasadam. Self-satisfaction. Utam. Moreover. Yatram. Where there is Guneshu. In the modes of nature. Asangam. No attachment. Kaivalyam. Transcendental. Sammatam. Approved. Padam. Path. To. But. Atam. Therefore. Bhakti Yogam. Devotional service. Kam. Who. Nivritam. Absorbed in. Harikatashu. In the transcendental topics of the Lord. Ratim. Attraction. Nam. Shall not. Kuryat. Do. Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Purport. According to Bhagavad Gita 10.9, the characteristics of pure devotees are wonderful. The complete functional activities of pure devotee are always engaged in the service of the Lord, and thus the pure devotees exchange feelings of ecstasy between themselves and relish transcendental bliss. This transcendental bliss is experienced even in the stage of devotional practice, sadhana avastha, if properly undertaken under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And in the mature stage, the developed transcendental feeling culminates in realization of the particular relationship with the Lord by which the living entity is originally constituted, up to the relationship of conjugal love with the Lord, which is estimated to be the highest transcendental bliss. Thus, Bhakti Yoga, being the only means of God realization, is called Kaivalyam. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the Vedic version, Eko Narayano Deva Paravaranam Parama Asti Kaivalya Samjita. In this connection, and establishes that Narayan, the personality of Godhead, is known as Kaivalya, and the means which enables one to approach the Lord is called the Kaivalya Panta, or the only means of attainment of Godhead. The Kaivalya Panta begins from Shravana, or hearing those topics that relate to the personality of Godhead, and the natural consequence of hearing such Harikatha is attainment of transcendental knowledge, which causes detachment from all mundane topics, for which a devotee has no taste at all. For a devotee, all mundane activities, social and political, become unattractive, and in the mature state, such devotee becomes uninterested, even in his own body, and what to speak of bodily relatives. In such a state of affairs, one is not agitated by the waves of the material modes. There are different modes of material nature, and all mundane functions in which a common man is very much interested or in which he takes part become unattractive for the devotee. This state of affairs is described herein as Pratinivritta Gunaromi, and it is possible by Atma Prasada, or complete self-satisfaction without any material connection. The first-class devotee of the Lord attains this stage by devotional service, but despite his loftiness for the Lord's satisfaction, he may play the voluntary part of the preacher of the Lord's glory and dovetail all into devotional service, even mundane interest. Just to give the neophytes a chance to transform mundane interest into transcendental bliss. Srila Rupa Goswami has described this action of pure devotee as Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. Even mundane activities dovetailed with service to the Lord are also calculated to be transcendental and approved Kaivalya affairs. Jnanam yadapriti nivritta gunorma chakram atma prasada utayatra guneshu sangam kaivalya sammata patastu ata bhakti yogam ko nivrito harikata suiratim nakuryat. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpataru Bhisha Kripa Sinu Bevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Yogaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare Good to see all of you this morning. We are continuing study of the third chapter of the second canto. And one thing I believe it's really important to notice how Bhagavatam is so nicely arranged in systematic way to essentially help the conditioned soul to gradually progress. And as we recall from the titles of the previous chapters, first we had first chapter, the first step in God realization, which talked about Lord's Viratrup. Then we were discussing Lord in the heart, super soul. And now in the third chapter, we are discussing pure devotional service. And the one thing I like especially, there is that additional few words, it says the change in a heart. The change in a heart, very important. So, a couple days ago, as I was driving to the temple, since I don't come very often due to my work schedule, so I was kind of really, you know, feeling excited to say. And as I was getting on the road, I was thinking, what do devotees in the spiritual world feel when they wake up in the morning? What do the cowboys feel when they wake up in the morning and they're about to meet Supreme Lord? And as I was thinking like that, I just concluded, I don't know. It's definitely a good question. I'm curious, but I don't know. So then I came to temple, and I saw the devotees eagerly waiting for the curtain to open. And then we had the kirtan, and as we were chanting, I looked at our Prabhuji, and something came in my mind, and I was thinking in my heart, this is what it feels like. This is probably, you know, I'm kind of guessing, but this is probably how it is. The devotees are very eager to see the Lord, and that love and affection is just pouring spontaneously. And if for some reason one of them is not there, Krishna is thinking, where is my prana, where is my shesha, where is my trivikram, where is my radhikesh, where is my keshava, where is my aragatnika? So Krishna is thinking like that. He knows each of us deeply in a heart, and there is that loving connection. So I thought, like, this is really wonderful. Srila Prabhupada did such amazing service by bringing Krishna consciousness to the West. So in this verse today, which is actually a very beautiful verse, it's pointing out what is the real knowledge. What is the real knowledge? And it says that knowledge which is in relation to the Supreme Lord is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. And I like how it's structured, this verse, because it really emphasizes that true knowledge should be self-evident by the result. Nowadays, we often hear people say, follow the science. But whose science we are following? And what the true science is? And then we can ask, Mr. Scientist, how much did you receive in the royalty from the pharmaceutical company? Are you really telling the truth? Are you really speaking the truth like Brahmana should? And scientists should be most intelligent people. And unfortunately, the truth is quite often they're not. They're manipulating data and presenting in such a way to fit their own agendas. And then we can say, okay, if we are to follow the science, and you are saying that there is a heartbeat in the baby in the womb just after 3 or 4 weeks, then by that logic, why we should even debate the question of abortion? Prabhupada was very strong on that and spoke very strongly how sinful that is. But we can see that in this current Kali Yuga, people are so confused, so bewildered by the leaders who are basically guiding them in wrong direction. I remember one nice song back in 90s that devotees made, and it was basically, the song was blind men follow blind men and falling into the ditch. And that is exactly what we are witnessing in the current state of affairs in the world. So in this verse, it is clearly pointing out the true knowledge is actually self-evident by its result. And what is the result of the transcendental knowledge? It says complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Does anybody know the difference between the waves and whirlpools? I was curious, I looked today in Google. Trivikram Prabhu?
Whirlpool spins around like this, waves.
That is correct. That is correct. So the waves, they are kind of like directional. They pull, you know, and then come back and pushing back, so they're, you know, in one direction, while the whirlpool, because of the force of the winds, it creates kind of like a vacuum, almost like in the oceans, especially during the hurricanes, they're often perceived. And we can imagine how the conditioned soul is being thrown around, tossed back and forward by the three moods of nature, suffering in the material energy. Waves and whirlpools, everything is coming on us. So, he is the relief. Krishna is giving us kind of like a map, guiding us. You want to be free from the miseries? Come to me. And then it says, such knowledge is self-satisfying, due to its being free from the material attachment, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. So we don't need to listen, Mr. Scientist, who is speculating in his laboratory. Here we have the greatest authorities giving us true knowledge. And then the last sentence is very important. It says, who could fail to be attracted? Who could fail to be attracted? It's kind of like saying, do you want to know how to make $10 million? you know, you would think everybody, yeah, tell me, give me the, you know, secret sauce. So here we have the greatest transcendental secret revealed, like Chaturatma Prabhu was saying the other day. It is not really a secret because we are openly giving it to people on the streets, and Divyanga Prabhu is meeting the conditioned souls every day. But people are just not interested. They don't really see the value. It's kind of like giving somebody, you know, block of gold, and who doesn't really know how valuable it is. He may think like, oh, what is this? Yeah, you know, I can't eat it. It's no use to me. So we have to understand really there is a value. There is really tangible value in this. And I recall listening to one interview with one very successful multimillionaire. And the reporter was asking him, so how did you achieve what you achieved? And this man said, well, first 6 years of my, you know, youth, basically I was failure and I was broke. And then I met my teacher, and then he taught me how to change my philosophy. And then the following 6 years, I became multimillionaire. And he said, it's easy, anybody can do it. And the reporter looked at him and he said, well, if it's so easy, then why doesn't everybody does it? And then he said something that really kind of resonated with me. He said, well, the problem is the things that are easy to do, they're also easy not to do. And quite often people neglect to see the value in very simple activities. And therefore there is a neglect. And then he said, neglect is like cancer. It grows and grows and grows and eventually kills the person. So I was thinking that, you know, apparently mundane point of view, actually it's quite applicable to the sadhaka, on the process of sadhana bhakti. Because if you neglect really simple activities that Srila Prabhupada gave us, essentially, we won't really achieve the result, or it may take much longer than it should. So I would like to refer to one beautiful verse, actually, from second chapter, which Prabhupada wrote really wonderful purport here. And Prabhupada is saying, there are three stages in chanting the holy name of the Lord. The first stage is the offensive chanting of the holy name, and the second is the reflective stage of chanting of the holy name. And then the third stage is the offenseless chanting of the holy name. And then he goes on to explain, in the offenseless stage, one actually enters into the kingdom of God, although physically he may apparently be within material world. Can you believe that? I'll read one more time. It says, in the offenseless stage, one actually enters into the kingdom of God, although physically he may apparently be within the material world. So, properties like, sometimes like, he puts these like secret like gems almost, and when you find them, you just, whoa, it's beautiful. And then he goes on explaining, when we speak of hearing and chanting, it means that not only should one chant and hear of the holy name of the Lord, but one should also read and hear the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. By systematic nurturing, the creeper will grow to such an extent that it will penetrate the coverings of the universe. Penetrate coverings of the universe. And then Prabhupada says, the ripe fruits of love of God are relished only by the devotees constantly engaged in the watering process as described above. But the working devotees must always be mindful so that the creeper which has grown will not be cut off. Therefore, he should be mindful of the following considerations. And this is where I'm trying to get. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain, and he talks about the mad elephant offense. Now, I never seen mad elephant, but I can imagine they could be quite problematic. even if the normal elephant walks in your garden that you carefully cultivated and planted the seeds, I can imagine there will be some damage. So what to speak about mad elephant, which is very disturbed, very angry, and is crushing everything and anything on its path. So what is that mad elephant offense? So Prabhupada explains, offense by one at the feet of a pure devotee may be linked to the mad elephant who devastates a very good garden if it enters. And then he said, one must be very careful to guard himself against such offense at the feet of a pure devotee, just as one protects a creeper by all around fencing. So we should put the fence around our spiritual garden. It so happens that by watering process, some weeds also grow. So you have a beautiful plant and you're watering it every day. But in that process, the weeds, they also get nourished from the water. So we have to watch out for them. And then he said, and unless such weeds are uprooted, the nurturing of the main creeper or the creeper of bhakti yoga may be hampered. Actually, these weeds are material enjoyment, merging of the self in the absolute without separate individuality, and many other desires in the field of religion, economic development, sense enjoyment, and emancipation. Yeah. So then Prabhupada concludes, the devotee must therefore be very careful to uproot the different weeds in the very beginning. Only then will the healthy growth of the main creeper not be stunted. And by so doing, the devotee is able to relish the fruit of love of God and thus live practically with Lord Krishna, even in this life, and be able to see the Lord in every step. Beautiful. So, so a few more points I would like to mention. And then basically back to our verse, it says that one becomes Atma Prasada, self-satisfaction, when one is absorbed in Hari Katashu, the transcendent topics of the Lord. And as we know from Bhagavad Gita, what does that self-satisfaction look like? There is a very beautiful comparison, and it's described just like so many rivers, they are flowing into the ocean, but the ocean remains peaceful. You know, regardless of, you know, so many rivers coming in continuously. So it is explained that devotee should be so deep in its spiritual practice, like the ocean, that he won't be disturbed by the inflow of so many desires that are coming continuously as long as we have material body. Now, then Prabhupada goes on to the purport to this verse. And the first thing that he writes in the purport is the verse, he's actually quoting the verse from Gita, 10:9. And that's actually one of my favorite verses. Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam katyantascha mam nityam tushyanticha ramanticha. And as we know, this verse is actually one of the four, basically, chatushloki of the Bhagavad Gita. Very important verse. So, Prabhupada, he goes on to say, according to Gita 10:9, the characteristics of pure devotees are wonderful, wonderful. And basically, this verse talks how devotees are continuously enlivening each other by discussing the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there are so many examples, and I will just briefly mention two. After Maharaj Parikshit heard from Shukadev Goswami, essentially he's preparing to leave this world, what happens, his mother comes, Uttara, and she approaches him and she asks him, please tell me what is the essence of what you have heard. And initially Parikshit, he says, mother, you know, this is, you know, I'm not sure this is the right time to talk, you know. Normally at the time of leaving body, one should really focus the mind and, the, you know, cut all attachments. But then he said, but because of your question, you know, basically he said, I cannot, you know, reject to answer your question, because she's asking about Supreme Lord. And then, as we know, Parikshit goes on to speak, and that's how we have Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So that is one example. Even at the moment of dying, one is eager to glorify the Lord. And we can see Prabhupada, perfect example, to the last moments he's engaged in translating his wonderful books. And we may think, like I was talking about wealthy men, you know, everybody wants to hear from him. So compared to that, like, how much even more people should be eager to hear from Srila Prabhupada. I mean, who is the wealthiest man? It's not Jeff Bezos, it's not Elon Musk, it's not Bill Gates. It's Srila Prabhupada. Because he brings the greatest wealth from the Goloka Vrindavan. And he's here basically giving us, you know, just, you know, take it. You know, he doesn't ask for anything, just, you know, just take it. So the next example I have is, it comes from Chaitanya Charitamrita. We find a beautiful narration about Sakshi Gopal. Essentially, Lord Chaitanya was traveling throughout South India. And then as they were traveling, Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, and all the devotees, they came to the place called Katak, I believe is the name. And previously, Lord Nityananda, as he was traveling through holy places, he came to the same village, and he heard the story from the villagers about this beautiful deity, Gopal. And after having kirtan, devotees sat down, and Lord Nityananda started narrating the story. And then he explained how long time ago, there were two Brahmins, and they were going on a pilgrimage. And as they were traveling all different holy places, they came finally to Vrindavan. And younger Brahmana, he was very humble, and he was always assisting the older Brahmanas. He was doing any kind of seva necessary to assist him. To the point that all the Brahmana, he became so pleased with him, and he said, "My dear Brahmana, I'm going to give you my daughter in marriage, just out of the gratitude for all your kindness and service during this journey." And the Yagin Brahmin said, "Oh no, don't speak like that. You come from a very aristocratic and educated family, and I'm just, you know, poor, and you know, I don't really deserve your daughter. So please don't speak like that. Your family and friends, they will not support your decision. So please don't speak like that." But Elder Brahmana, he was insisting, "No, no, no. My daughter is, you know, I can do, you know, as I think is proper, and definitely I'll do what I said." So then young Brahmin said, "Well, if that is your wish, please, you know, promise that in front of the Gopal." And he said, "Yes." and he spoke that in front of the Gopal. And young Brahmin said, "My dear Lord, I shall call upon you to be my witness if it becomes necessary." So they continued their travels, and they returned back to their village, Vidyanagar. And some days passed after that, and the elder Brahmana, he became really disturbed in mind. He remembered exactly what he said, and he told his family, his wife, his son, and when they heard, they became angry like anything. "How could you do that? You're going to embarrass our entire family. You know, we are a reputable family, aristocratic family. Our reputation will go down. People will speak bad about us. How could you do that?" So they were chastising him. And this poor Brahmin, he was, you know, as sometimes householders, they're perplexed. You know, they have, you know, one desire, and then there is, you know, social obligations, and they're kind of conflicting sometimes. So so he was very worrisome, because he really didn't want to disobey and break his word. So after a few days, essentially, the younger Brahmin came, and he kind of wanted to remind him. And he said, "How come you're not mentioning anything about your promise? You said you're going to give your daughter in a marriage, and now you're being silent." And when he said that, the son of the older Brahman, he came with a stick and started chasing him, like, you know, ready to beat him. And he ran away. Intelligent. Brahmanas are very intelligent. So then, next day, he came to the village, and he called all the village people to the place where they usually meet to discuss important issues. And he said, "My dear villagers, this Brahmin, he made a promise in front of Gopal, and now he's being silent. He offered his daughter in marriage to me, and now he's not saying anything." So then, basically, the son comes and he starts manipulating the, you know, the story. And he kind of indicates, "No, no, this rascal, he stole money from my father. He was just greedy, and he actually gave something to my father and made him intoxicated. And my father didn't know what he was talking about. And now he's just trying to cheat even further by stealing my sister." And the villagers were, you know, kind of divided in their opinion. Some were saying, "Well, you know, if he said that in front of deity, he should keep his promise." But then the others were saying, "It's possible. I mean, greed is, and lust is very powerful. It's possible that he got polluted in his mind and cheated the older Brahmana." So then the younger Brahmana said, "But he made a promise in front of Gopal." And then older Brahmana said, "Well, Okay. I'm kind of pedaling backwards here. Sorry. So the young Brahmana said, I shall call the Lord to be my witness. And as he said that, the old Brahmana took that as opportunity to save the day. And he said, well, if the Lord comes, I'll surely do what, you know, whatever the Lord said. If the Lord comes, I'll fulfill my promise if he confirms that's what I said. And then, interestingly, even the son, who was up to the, you know, kind of causing all commotion and trouble, he also agreed. He also agreed. He said, surely, if Gopal comes and he is witness, then yeah, we will definitely give our sister in marriage. So I was thinking about that, how amazing. He had three personalities, and they all have kind of different thought process. First you have young Brahmana. First, he is not really doing all this because he's, you know, greedy or lusty. None of that. None of that is present in his heart. He's just trying to actually upkeep the dharmic duty of the older Brahmana. He didn't want older Brahmana to actually be known as a liar. He was more concerned about the welfare of the older Brahmana than his own welfare. Can you imagine, you know, such elevated thinking? And then in the case of elder Brahmana, he's thinking, he's actually not even doubting that the Lord will come. Because he was perplexed. His son and his wife, they said they're going to kill themselves if he gives daughter in marriage. Can you imagine that? You know, your wife is going to kill herself. Your son is going to kill himself. And so you have, on one side, your relatives about to suicide, and on the other, you made a promise in front of the Lord. So he was in really tough situation. So finally, he finds this as the solution. He actually realizes the Lord will surely come. He has no doubt, no doubt at all. And then you have a son who is 100%, actually 110% convinced that the Lord will not come. Totally opposite. So the son is completely convinced the Lord is just statue, he cannot walk, and he's not going to come. And after a few days, everybody will forget, and life will go on. So anyhow, the story goes on. It's a beautiful narration that you can find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the reason I like this example a lot is because we see from this story how even Lord himself, he relishes narration about the pastimes of the Lord. And as devotees were sitting and listening, and Lord Nityananda was narrating that story, all of a sudden devotees, they actually saw Lord Chaitanya being no different than Gopal himself. And everybody was kind of bewildered, like, they, you know, Gopal was smiling, Lord Chaitanya was smiling, and they actually realized they are identical. So, to end, I wanted to kind of give you a beautiful meditation for the day, so you can think throughout the day. This is a beautiful poem by Narottam Das Thakur. And he said, O Lord Hari, I have spent my life uselessly. Having obtained human birth and having not worshipped Radha and Krishna, I have knowingly drunk poison. The treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended as the congregational chanting of Lord Hari's holy names. Why did my attraction for the chanting never come about? Day and night my heart burns from the fire of the poison of worldliness, and I have not taken the means to relieve it. Lord Krishna, who is the son of the king of Raja, became the son of Sachi, Lord Chaitanya and Balaram became Nithai, the holy name delivered all those souls who were lowly and wretched. The two sinners Jaga and Madai are evidence of this. O Lord Krishna, son of Nanda, accompanied by the daughter of Vrishabhanu, please be merciful to me now. Narottam Das says, O Lord, please do not push me away from your reddish lotus feet, for who is my beloved except for you? Shri Narottam Das Ki Jai. Thank you so much. I'll stop here. It's getting a little bit late. If anybody would like to comment, question, critics, please do. Veda Vatiji, please. And then Ragatika.
Thank you, Prabhu. You always give such nice classes, including wonderful stories. In the purport, how Prabhupada said that a transcendental, fully spiritualized person may sometimes act on the mundane plane to encourage mundaners how they can engage in Krishna's service. So I thought of two examples. I just remembered how reading in Leelamrita, how Prabhupada in the early days, those first few devotees, they would sit and talk with him, and he would ask them about their lives coming. And he was really interested. He even asked Sally Agarwal about the frozen vegetables and the vacuum cleaner, and she thought, yeah, anyway, but he was finding out about the American culture so that he could approach people where they were coming from, understand how it worked. And I also, we just celebrated the disappearance day of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and I remember him saying, he preached so much in sometimes, like indirectly, or in unusual ways, like becoming a king or something in an African place, and also going to highly professional arrangements and talking about conflict resolution and all these things. And I remember him saying, I do this because I can. And I thought how wonderful it was, because he brought people into Krishna consciousness that, you know, they would be engaged for some time and then go, a friend says, oh, when did you get into Hare Krishna? Oh, is that what this is? You know, they, without even realizing what they, you know, it was, so this is such a talent. And we each have our individuality. Mm-hmm. And if we could, you know, keep focused on the spiritual goal, but also keep some ability to reach out to people that, you know, we have something in common with, even if it seems mundane, if we keep Krishna in the center. That's what I thought of when you read that part of the purport.
Yes, that is a very important point. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Prabhupada was the expert. He would know how to connect people to devotional service. And regardless from what background, like if you listen there, like his interviews with either academics or people from different professions, he would always look for ways to actually engage them. If they're businessmen, he would tell them, you know, why don't you join my business? If they were a scientist, he would tell them, become the best of the scientists. Use your scientific knowledge and intelligence to actually discover the greatest truth. So, yeah, that is the talent of the preacher. And yeah, we should try to cultivate the same. Thank you so much. Yes, Mother Ragatnika.
First, I want to thank you for refreshing our memory of that wonderful pastime of Sakshi Gopal and the faith that these Brahmins had. And Bhagavati's contribution, because I was going to ask you for examples of this statement that Srila Prabhupada made in the purport. Another question, you brought up the, the creeper, the devotional creeper, the garden. Can you remind us, what is the fence that we build around our creeper?
That's a good question. Yes, Well, as we know, basically the intelligence becomes sharpened by the spiritual knowledge. In other words, by continuous hearing and studying scriptures, our intelligence becomes refined. And I believe that is the invisible fence. And then Krishna actually goes, like we were talking about Chaturshloki from the Gita, the verse 10:10, is it 10:10? Tadami buddhi yogantam. So where Krishna says basically, I give the understanding and intelligence to those devotees who are actually eagerly serving me. So that is the actually best protection. By continuously following the instructions of the spiritual master, we are under the protective umbrella, under his guidance. And as long as we faithfully follow the words of our spiritual master, which tells us, study my books. Prabhupada tells us, you know, these books are not just for distribution, they're for all of our members to actually read daily. That would be my humble opinion. If somebody would like, yeah, Trivikram Prabhu. Cannot more. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, please.
Thank you for your very nice class. I just wanted to comment, you spoke about neglect and how, you know, how sometimes we, yeah, how important it is to not skip out on those little things, or they seem like little things, but they're very important. Just like you spoke about how when you were coming for greeting of the deities, you know, and just like, yeah, those things are, sometimes they become, I guess we can kind of do them in a mechanical way or just not do them at all. But it's very important that we continue with all of those things, because that's, as you were saying, that's what makes the fence. And just again to mention His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, I was listening to a class the other day where he always frequently gave this example. He said when devotees don't practice or, you know, do those little things that seem ritualistic, but they're not, that it's like, he compared it to going on the battlefield with your uniform on but no weapons. And so then it's like we're just kind of out there, and the enemy, so-called, is seeing us, but we're not prepared. And so then, you know, what's going to happen? I don't, does that make sense?
Yeah, that is a wonderful point. Thank you.
So to say now is follow the science. We have to follow the science of Krishna consciousness.
That's the
best. But because we're living in the material world, we have to follow some of the material science too. But some of the signs are wrong, you know, so sometimes we have to know what's wrong and what's right, you know? Yeah. But unfortunately, most of the world think now that science is the only leading way, you know? And so we have to follow it, even though some are wrong, you know? But I guess we have to be intelligent enough to know what's wrong and what's right in that field.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and that is the beauty of following the transcendental authority. Like in this case where we were discussing the story of Sakshi Gopal, this young Brahmana said, he is the highest authority. Entire world follows him. So, you know, if we follow the words of Krishna, then we can definitely have understanding and discrimination to make right choices. I'll stop here. Thank you so much. Karantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.